This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, sevillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org. He joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth, a little development, and a little pie. Saturday was March 14th, 3.14. That was Pie Day. And we're going to celebrate today. In fact, I think you've already celebrated.
I couldn't stop. You were talking away there, and my key lime pie disappeared.
You started without me. We have so much great pie here. We invite everybody here in the building to partake and enjoy. And if you are listening and want to stop by and just have a slice, come on by 1140 Rose Hill Drive. Just come on in and help yourself. There's some good pie here. First off, tell us why we're talking about pie. And while you're doing that, I'm going to start eating some of this
pie. You start eating pie.
What do I have on my plate?
Coy's got two pies. Well, he has three, but two that I brought, and Coy brought two to the show as well.
Yeah.
You have a key lime pie from Chandler's Bakery.
That's where I'm starting.
In the county. And then you have a city pie. I tried to bring a city and county pie in the spirit of city-county cooperation.
Oh, my God.
You have a sweet potato pie from Wayside in the city off Jefferson Park Avenue, right near the bridge there.
I also brought an apple and a cherry from Foods of All Nations. So, good stuff all the way around. This key lime is incredible.
That is the best key lime pie I've ever had.
I got to agree with you. Where is it from again?
Chandler's Bakery.
This is incredible.
So Chandler's is up in the old Circuit City Shopping
Center.
Oh,
yeah, up in there. That's Albemarle Square.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, my gosh, this is incredible.
Now, the reason we're talking about pie, and if any listeners want to explore this topic further, you can go to www.sevilletomorrow.org/pie.
This is the sweet potato.
And where's this from? That's from Wayside. How's that?
Oh, man.
I haven't tried that one yet.
That's my favorite pie.
I'm going to have that one for dessert. So, Coy and I, the regular listeners will know, we've been talking about pie a lot the past couple of years.
Yes, we have.
But
this show is on about dinner time. I start getting hungry.
I always like to point out, in the event members of my board of directors are listening, that there is a connection to Charlottesville Tomorrow and to our community. And it's about our sense of place. You know, what is it that makes this place special? What is it that gets people talking about the history of our community? And it's not just buildings. It's not just, you know, the downtown mall. It's not just the lawn and the rotunda. But food comes into play as something that makes a place special. And we talked about how there was a place outside of Washington that was famous for its pie. Lynchburg has Montana Plains Bakery. Stanton has Mrs. Rao's. Danville has a couple places I like. Not known for pie, but known for other things. Midtown Market has great chicken salad and these oatmeal cookies.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
So I was thinking, well, what is Charlottesville Albemarle?
What's our food?
Yeah, what's our food?
I mean, it used to be apples. The Albemarle Pippin was known worldwide. Yeah. Raised. They had them, all those trees and orchards all over the place.
They grew them, Coy.
They grew them, yes. Thank you. I say born, raised, bred. What do you do with an apple?
We still grow some apples around here. In fact, in our yard in Ivy, we have some probably over 100-year-old apple trees.
Wow.
Used to be part of an apple orchard in that community.
Cool.
So we have part of that history growing in our backyard. And but we started our search. And the other reason this was important for Charlottesville Tomorrow was I needed a way to take my staff around the county and the city and show them the places we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
So whether it's new developments out in Crozet, things happening on 29, things down in Scottsville, you name it. This was a way we could go out exploring, have a good time, find those special culinary treats that make our community special.
That key lime is awesome.
And my assessment of the local pie scene is that we're in rather good shape.
we're okay.
our focus last year was on circumnavigating the county and visiting places out in the rural countryside that had pie. And we went into every little country store we could and said, you know, do you have any fresh pie? And more often than not, they pointed to the Little Debbie rack and said, that's our pie right there.
Yeah.
But in a few special places in the county, Lumpkins down in Scottsville, Crossroads Country Store in North Garden on 29, and then Child's Peach Orchard out in Crozet. Those were the three best pies we found on that trip. Now, today, Coy and I are sampling some of the pies we didn't get to on that trip.
Yeah.
These are ones from closer in.
Yeah.
These are urban pies.
Wayside, awesome sweet potato pie. Chandler's, best key lime pie I've ever tasted. You're right. It's fantastic.
And
key lime is incredible.
It's like a two-story pie.
And it's also huge.
It is a towering pie. It came in a huge box.
I mean, it looks like a cake.
I told Mike out there that he'd have to sign a disclaimer if he took one of those pieces.
This is good stuff.
So at Chandler's, now Chandler's has been around, I don't know, like 12, 15 years, I think. And Carolyn Mucciarino is the proprietor of Chandler's Bakery. And I called up her staff and I said, what is the pie that Chandler's is known for? And they said pumpkin and pecan, but they only do those in season.
Mm-hmm.
So given that it's also St. Patrick's Day today, I thought green, key lime pie. So that's how we got the key lime
green.
Pie.
Yeah.
And they make that from scratch, of course.
You like it? Michael likes it. The key lime? Is that the best? Oh, you haven't tried them all yet. It's awesome.
Get to work out there. You got to try all those pies.
Come on, Michael.
Wayside, Calvin Cummings is the owner of Wayside right now.
Yeah, Wayside Fried Chicken.
Has the best fried chicken.
In Fry Spring.
Yep. And you can go to their website at waysidechicken.com,
mm-hmm.
and you can learn about the history of the restaurant there. And previously owned by the Quillen family, but Calvin Cummings bought Wayside, took over in 2004. So he's been the proprietor for a while. I ran into him the other day. And I said, what is the best pie I should get? And I knew the answer.
Sweet potato.
People had already called in and told us.
Yeah.
And he said that was the
pie. It is awesome. It's awesome. And it's smothered with this key lime pie. They're all mixed together. Well, my plate. This is so good.
So tell us about your pies, Coy.
They came from Foods of All Nations.
Yep.
I don't know the history of Foods of All Nations. What opened in the 70s, I think? 70s or 80s? I don't know. But they bake them every morning. Right there. And I said, you sure this isn't like trucked in and you're warming it up? She said, no, we bake them right here.
Yeah, you do have to ask those questions.
Yeah. Yeah. You want the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, So this is good. It's an apple and a cherry from Foods of All Nations.
That is really good.
Is it sweet? The cherry's real sweet, isn't it?
I haven't hit that one yet. Let me try that one.
Mm.
I love cherry pie.
This is so good. So this is Pi Day. We're celebrating Pi Day like on the calendar, March 14th.
Well, it's important to celebrate.
But it's not the Charlottesville Tomorrow Pie Day, but we celebrate pie any chance we get, right?
You have to celebrate it multiple times in any given year, Coy.
Yes.
Let me tell you why. One, it's a whole lot of fun. And two, 3.14, of course, is the mathematician's pie day.
Right.
So I know at schools in Albemarle, like at Albemarle High School, they are making a big deal about Pi Day. The Math Honor Society gets involved and sort of takes over this event at Albemarle High School.
No, good for them.
And they rescheduled it from last Friday to tomorrow. So people were telling me I had to go to Albemarle and experience Pi Day there.
Yeah. You going?
I'm not able to go tomorrow because I have some other meetings going on. But
do the kids bake pie or something?
I don't know where it comes from, but everyone gets to take part in Pi Day at Albemarle High School. Apparently, there's a breezeway. The breezeway is the social gathering place in the center of the Albemarle High School complex. So
yeah.
They will be having pie on the breezeway, according to the principal out there. And so that's what the Math Honor Society is doing. That's why we celebrate pie around 3:14. We also celebrate. You have to do this seasonally, too.
Yeah.
See, like a key lime pie, you can pretty much make any time, right?
Right.
But if you want an apple pie or a peach pie, a peach cobbler, best to wait till, you're picking the apples or peaches
off
the trees.
Right, in the fall.
So late summer is a good time to do peaches, and that's what we found in August when we did the last pie day.
Yeah.
And so Charlottesville Tomorrow will probably celebrate again in August. So we can get the peaches being harvested.
And the big question is, are you gonna like do this as a public event?
We're talking about it.
So that people could go around and have a celebrate pie in Central Virginia and travel around with us
and then we get into the economic development part of this.
Yeah.
And
how much does it cost to rent a bus?
Agricultural enterprises and how important that is to the community, and it is an important part of the community.
Yeah.
In fact, the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors just updated their economic development part of the comp plan, and they added in a lot of language about supporting local agriculture. Eating pie is a good way to do that.
Yeah. Eat local, buy local.
And then in the fall, you could observe Pi Day a third time when the apples are being picked.
Yeah. What about pecan? Is that year-round?
I'm not sure when that happens.
I don't know.
We'll have to call Chandler's and ask him about that.
I know the Virginian used to do a mean chocolate pecan pie.
I remember that.
That was really good. I don't know if they still do that or not, but that would be something good to know. We're eating pie at Charlottesville tomorrow, right here with Brian Wheeler, who joins us each Tuesday afternoon right here on this little program. My name is Coy Barefoot. Survived the flu, survived bronchitis, and back in the air chair. Very happy to be back here. Do we play that clip from Dave Norris now?
We should. And this is an example of how our discussions about pie have really resonated with the community. They have... you know, found their way into public policy statements from
we're like the pie guys.
Major public officials like Mayor Dave Norris.
Mayor Dave Norris, right here.
The goals of this study, the goals of this review would be to inventory all of our existing field spaces and then to figure out where we can add to that inventory. Where are those spaces that...
What's he talking about?
He's talking about parks and rectangular fields and softball fields.
Okay.
For allocating and utilizing those spaces in a way that best meets the needs of all of our recreational organizations, including softball, football, lacrosse, soccer, down the line. We have to stop. Right now, we're sort of arguing over pieces of this pie, and the pie is simply not big enough, and the process for divvying up the pie is not transparent, is not fair, and you'll hear later a couple of the speakers talk about their, some of their frustrations with the process that's in place now. And the answer is we need to increase the pie, and we need to come up with a better solution for divvying out the pie. Brian, you'll appreciate pie.
Ooh, I love it.
Look at that. I wasn't even there.
He wasn't.
And Mayor Norris, in a press conference, is talking about me and pie.
I love it.
That's how much influence your show has.
You weren't there? I thought you were there.
I wasn't even there.
He was just saying, Brian, you...
He knew. He saw our microphone. He knew I'd be listening.
I love it. Brian, you know a little thing about pie, don't you?
So pie, Charlottesville tomorrow, Coy Barefoot show.
We're the pie guys.
We've penetrated the public policy realm. With all things pie.
People think pie. They think Charlottesville tomorrow, Charlottesville right now. Brian Wheeler, Coy Barefoot. Look no further. Right here. Quick break for local news and weather. More growth and development and pie coming right up. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at seavilletomorrow.org. He joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth and development. I think I sound like I've been sick.
You do.
But I'm sort of listening to myself as I'm talking, thinking, man, you sound like crap.
But that key lime pie will help.
It will.
I'm confident.
And I'm going to get seconds when we're done. It is good stuff. Good stuff.
The sun came out today, this afternoon, as I was shopping for pies.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew it was going to be a good day the rest of the day.
It is a good day. Tomorrow's going to be even better.
That sounds good.
It's going to be sunny in the 70s. Absolutely lovely.
Good day to eat leftover pie.
Let's talk a little growth and development. Give us an update. Where do we start?
Well, I want to draw folks' attention to a long, in-depth piece we did on SeavilleTomorrow.org and the News Center on affordable housing. We have not spent a lot of time on that topic. We certainly cover it when it comes up. It came up last time City Council had a retreat in Stanton, as you remember, and that was one of their top priorities of things to address. And one of the things Charlottesville Tomorrow tries to do is add some value when we hear something repeated in the community, you know, get an in-depth understanding of it, make sure that we can ask candidates running for office smart questions about that topic, but also try to make sure the public has a common set of facts about which they can make decisions and come to an understanding of these things.
So you did a lot of research on affordable housing.
We did. Our fellow, Fania Gordon, wrote this piece.
And, go, Fania.
She's a master's student at the University of Virginia. And she's been working with us all this school year. And, yeah, she did her homework on this. We put some information to compare Albemarle and Charlottesville's contributions to the solving this affordable housing challenge. And it's a hard thing to talk about because there's so many different types of affordable living choices. I don't even like using the term affordable housing.
I hate it.
I couldn't really figure out a way to avoid
doing it.
Doesn't
make any sense.
In the story.
It's something that's so relative, and yet you have such a completely unrelative term.
I like to say affordable living choices.
Yeah.
Because who would be against somebody having an affordable place to live?
Yeah.
We should all have that choice.
But when we were talking about this during the break, when when you use that term in public policy and legislators or local politicians use that term, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't they mean not something you can afford at any level of any income bracket? What they mean is entry-level home ownership, So affordable housing then would be, you know, a young couple or somebody starting out just out of school, got their first job, and they want to have a slice of the pie, and they want to have a seat at the table. They want to own their own home. So affordable housing to me means that you can afford that first home. It's the for the first time home buyers.
That's right.
Some, you know, 85 in this market, $85,000 to $150,000 is what I would think of.
Of what? As the cost of the house?
Of when they say affordable housing, that's what I say. Yeah, the cost of the house.
Yeah.
Buying your first home.
Well, one of the things they look at is how much income a family has. And so do you look at a single person? Do you look at a family of two? Do you look at a family of four? And a lot of this debate happens as well during living wage topics about how much, what should be the floor that we pay people.
Yeah.
You know, not a minimum wage. Is a minimum wage, I think most people would agree, is not a salary you could live on.
Right.
So the question in the community is often, well, what's the living wage? But then how do you calculate that? And the same thing is true about housing affordability. It's a hard thing to calculate. Everyone's situation is different.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the county, the policy is based on the idea that a house would be affordable if it is something you could buy if you're making 80% of the area median income. So the area median income for the Charlottesville area is $68,500. So 80% of that. So if you had an income, 80% of that, that house that's on the market should be affordable to you. And they have a way of setting it. I'm not describing it really well. We did describe it.
You're
in
talking
the story.
Math, so you instantly lost me.
Yeah, well, it is pie day.
When you start saying 80%, whew.
But here,
I need to see a picture.
Here's the thing. Often we, you know, this is something that Charlottesville wants to focus on, improving the existing affordable housing in the form of primarily public housing in the city. The majority of the affordable units that are available to people are in the public housing area in the city of Charlottesville. And the city wants to do a lot to improve those houses. There's some other private nonprofits working to redevelop some trailer parks and make them mixed-use communities.
Yeah.
And not displace anyone who lives there, but give them you know, more attractive living option.
When I think of affordable housing, I think of Habitat for Humanity.
And
that, to me, is what affordable housing is. You're going to get you in your own house, you're going to own it, but you're going to get some sweat equity to get your foot in the door.
They are one of the key organizations. And in a sidebar in this article, we outline the work of the Piedmont Housing Alliance.
Yeah, another good group.
The Habitat for Humanity of Greater Charlottesville and the Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority and how all of those things fit into this puzzle. But one of the things you often hear folks in the city say is, oh, the city's doing so much more than the county. And so we dug into that.
Is it true?
On the budget side and in number of units. Depends how you look at it. What we found on the budget side for last year's budget is, and we initially reported a different number. We've corrected that now in the story. But the county is actually contributing a larger amount per year in last year's budget. So about $2 million dedicated to assist with affordable housing. The city put in about $1.6 million. So that gives you some idea of the size differential there as far as monetary contributions. They just had a task force. You may remember there's a group called Impact that is involved with all the a number of churches in town come together. They ask elected officials to make an agreement that they will implement certain policies. Forming a task force on affordable housing was a past Impact request, and the city, county, and UVA did that. One of the number one recommendations coming out of that task force was create a permanent dedicated stream of funding for these initiatives, so beyond what's being put on the table today, and make sure that you don't have this debate in the budget every year. So basically take, you know, part of the tax rate.
So guarantee us the money so we don't have to come back and ask for it.
You know, earmark part of the tax rate to go towards these initiatives. So the city and county are both having that discussion. But then when it comes to number of units, we looked at how many they've actually got built today. But more importantly, I think, how many will they have in the future? And this is where it gets interesting because of the county's attempt to get affordable housing through proffers from developers. Proffer is something voluntary. A developer comes forward and says, I'll give you this if you rezone my property as that.
Yeah.
And in Albemarle County, they've gotten proffers for over 1,600 affordable homes. And right now in the city of Charlottesville, in place, affordable units is 714. So in the county, in place today, 514. So the city right now today has 200 more. But if Albemarle's proffers are received, if the building market picks up, if eventually these developments are built out, and the developments are places like Biscuit Run, Cascadia, North Point, Hollymead Town Center.
Who knows when those will get built, though?
Who knows? But what's on the table is that that's the county's, has been the county's approach. And because that's where a lot of the new housing is being built, it's not being built in the city as much.
Yeah.
Because it's being built in the county, their little tool to contribute here has been collecting proffers.
So it looks to me at first glance that the city is spending less money on affordable housing, but they have more units.
They have more units today.
County spending more money, but they have less to show for it.
Well, I guess that in the county, they would say that they are putting their money, they're making it available in a different way. And one of the things we broke out in the article was a chart showing how that money is divided. So a lot of the money in the county is in tax relief. So helping make the property taxes more affordable to people who, once they get in their homes.
Right.
So again, just help. It's not necessarily helping them buy it up front, but it's helping them stay in it. You know, once they get it, keeping housing affordable, that's a key question with these proffers. Once the developer builds them and somebody moves in the first time, how are we going to keep them affordable in the stock of housing
yeah.
in the future? I don't know that that question has been answered. It's something we need to keep an eye on. But the interesting thing to me was in the future, if Albemarle implements everything that they have got on the table in proffers, and Habitat Humanity does some of the big projects they've got in the county, especially the one around Biscuit Run, the county would eventually have three times the number of affordable housing units that the city has today. And that's not something that really gets talked about. I don't know that anyone has sort of tried to add it up in this way before. So we tried to add to that conversation, give something for people to chew on and think about. It doesn't, you know, those houses are not getting built today. So it's not an immediate solution.
Right. But you're saying in the pipeline, developers, are they held to that agreement or could they change?
No, it's part of the agreement. So the expectation is for most of those new developments that 15% of the homes built in a new development will be affordable.
Yeah.
Some developers say, I'd rather not build them, I'd rather give you cash. And then the money goes in to support other types of affordable housing
yeah.
in other places. So you can either make a cash contribution or you can build the units and sell them as affordable. So they would discount the price on them, basically.
And what about this thing? Was it Belvedere, the neighborhood that had the city wanted affordable housing and this Belvedere neighborhood?
That's in the county, yeah.
In the county?
Yep.
They had apartments over the garage. And that's how they were meeting their affordable housing requirement.
I think
which
it
to
did,
me, it's like, come on.
I think it did get approved with that. There was certainly plenty of discussion about whether that was the right way to go. And as I haven't thought about that in a while, but my memory is that they talked about how there shouldn't be one right way to do this. There should be multiple housing styles. One of the goals with the county's neighborhood model is to have a mix of housing types and affordability in the same area.
Right.
So that you don't, you know, all the low cost options are there, all the high cost options are there. You want a mixture.
So you have a $400,000 house with a with an apartment over the garage and back, and oh, that's the affordable housing back there for the student.
And you know that may work.
And again, it gets back to my point. I thought affordable housing was the entry level market. A young family wants to buy a home.
Yep.
And they're not going to buy a $215,000 home right off the gate. You know, I mean,
the big discussion when North Point was being approved in 2006. This is up 29 North. I think about 900 homes in the North Point development. That developer came in and said we would rather do what they called workforce housing. And so they sort of came up with a new definition and said, we think this is a more attractive product.
Sounds like where the coal miners live.
Well, you know what? They're right near the National Ground Intelligence Center.
What is workforce housing?
And, well, for working people like teachers, firemen, police officers, they were saying, listen, we want to help these people get starter homes. And these are people
yeah.
working in the community. And
that sounds like what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I hate that name, workforce housing.
I don't know what the right name for this is. And so that's why I always come
it's
back to...
It's the first rung on the ladder in home ownership. It's just the first step.
Everyone should have some affordable choice
yeah.
in front of them. And I think what the city and county are both trying to do is increase the number of options the resources that go into them, and the quality of those options that are available. So if we have existing housing today that was built, you know, decades ago, it may be time to retrofit that, and that's what the city's looking at.
Interesting. Because these folks who want to take that first step on the ladder in home ownership, if they're teaching in Albemarle County or teaching in Charlottesville, or they're working for the rescue squad or the hospital, and, you know, these kind of folks who don't make a ton of money, they shouldn't have to go look for a home in Fluvanna or Green. And even these days, those are getting expensive, you know?
Well, and that's another element of the story. We talked about transportation and people having to commute. So people, as they search for homes, are going further and further out. And that's putting more and more people on the roads.
Yeah, yeah.
So, ideally, you want public transportation available, or bike-friendly, pedestrian-friendly. You want these homes near where people work. Doesn't mean every person that works at a certain company is going to live right near it.
Right, right.
But if you give that choice to some people, they will choose to walk and not take their car.
And density isn't necessarily the answer, because if you build some of these high-rises in downtown Charlottesville, a place in one of those buildings could cost you a mint.
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars to live in one of those places.
We talked about one of those developments, the Gleason condominium towers, last week, and I drove by it on the way here so I could talk about it. Dave McNair wrote a good story in
The Hook
last week.
Yeah.
It is, but you may be thinking of the ACAC complex, because I drove by and the Gleason's hardly out of the ground. It's only the elevator shafts that are really up right now.
I'm thinking of the one that's behind Gleason's, the old Gleason's, the hardware store.
Yep. Well, that's the...
Or whatever.
That's the one that's fully up is part of the ACAC complex. I think it has another name. And there's like a parking garage right there, parking deck.
Yeah.
But that building is not the Gleason's condominiums, the one that's already up.
If you're looking at ACAC downtown at the front door,
yeah,
the thing to the right.
Yeah, that's not the Gleason.
Oh, it's not?
Nope.
Oh, I thought it was.
Nope. The Gleason is coming out of the ground, and it's
just not as fast.
Is it around
the corner?
No, it's in that same block.
Oh, okay.
But according to the story, Dave McNair says those units are selling like hotcakes, according to J.P. Williamson.
I bet. Folks want to live downtown. Walk to the downtown mall.
So one of those big, I think that's going to be a six-story high-end condo, but that's one that apparently had enough interest where they could actually move forward with it.
And meanwhile, the Landmark Hotel. What's the sound of wind rushing through tarps?
I spoke to somebody the other day who knows Lee Danielson, and the expectation there is that will probably sit idle for a couple years as the lawsuits work their way.
Can it do that, though?
Through the system.
I mean, literally, from an engineering, just in terms of physics, can you just leave that building? I mean, is it to a certain point where you could just, where they can?
It looks pretty solid.
Walk away, or do you got to like tear it down and start over?
I don't know what the consequences are of leaving that exposed.
If you leave a house, you could build a house to a certain point. If you walk away from it, you get back at some point, you may have to tear it down and start over.
Yep. Well, this is mostly concrete and steel at this point.
And those are very hard substances,
I take it. I've tested them thoroughly. They're very hard. But, you know, if you get water in there and it freezes, you know, I would think that would be a bad thing.
Oh, man.
I suggested to somebody that we put up, you know, the Festival of the Photo that they have in the downtown mall. You could sort of put a photo in each square on the tower.
You got to do something. That's amazing. It is truly a monument to the economy, or to one man's economy. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at sevilletomorrow.org. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. What else is going on?
Real quick, Charlottesville City Council had a mega meeting last night. They went to almost midnight. Sean Tubbs,
what were they doing? Sean Tubbs emailed me at like 11:30, said, "I'm still here. Can you believe this?"
Yeah, he emailed me at 11:50 and said, "Thank goodness I'm out of here." He was there late to capture City Council approving a resolution to add a city councilor to the board of the Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority.
Ooh.
And the county is expected to
That's a big deal.
Consider the same resolution, and it would add a member of the Board of Supervisors to the board.
Well, I wonder if that's going to fix the problem. The complaint being that, you know, this board...
Here's my take on it. I think
doesn't have anybody on it who's elected.
Well, that's true.
And yet they really affect our water rates and what we pay.
That's true, but all of the people that are on the board, the five that are on it, are all picked by elected officials. So if you... And I said this, Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan came to one RWSA meeting and demanded they all resign because they didn't like what they were doing. And I pointed out then that the Board of Supervisors and City Council could... If they thought something funny was going on, they could make them all resign immediately.
They have that authority.
Sure. I mean, you're talking about the county executive, the city manager, the head of city public works, Gary Fern, the head of the Albemarle County Service
The city
Authority.
And the county could get together and just totally change the makeup of that board.
Yeah.
You know, whenever they want.
They could. Will it make a difference? I think it'll certainly influence the conversations that happen at the board level.
Right.
But keep in mind, I don't expect the votes to really change because you're going to have basically two staff members with their bosses, with their boss or their boss's boss there, the elected official. And are they going to vote against what their elected official does? No.
The answer is no.
They won't.
Makes it a little awkward, doesn't it?
I think it makes it a little awkward. So I'm surprised they're doing it, to be quite honest.
Because it's not like they're trying to fix the problem that folks have said that exists. They're sort of tweaking it, but not fixing it.
If you want, it may help. I think it's good in this case because of the complexity of the water supply. It's good to have experts at the table who are involved in making these decisions and know all about how the system works. I think that's helpful. The Metropolitan Planning Organization does transportation. It's done a little differently. You've
yeah.
got two counselors, two supervisors. They have the votes there. That's a
I
different
prefer
model.
That.
That's a different
and
model.
I prefer that, and then the other folks would like advise that body.
Right, right.
You know, Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at seavilletomorrow.org. You can hear a complete podcast of this conversation at wina.com. Brian, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Y'all have a great night. Talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.